Well, brethren, we've been encouraged over the last several weeks of being prepared for the days that are coming ahead, to prepare for Passover, to get our minds in a place that's fitting before God. We've been encouraged to examine, and we've been encouraged to prepare for these days. We've been clearing our house of leavening, to remove every trace of it from our houses and our cars, places that we work. We've been preparing for the night to be, what we will do, who we'll be with, and how we'll celebrate that evening. And then the days of unleavened bread, with even a food exchange today to kick it off, of cool-looking, very tasty, scrumptious, large variety. I'm getting a little off track because I see there's more than there was earlier. And I know some of those flavors are quite exceptional. Looking forward to that exchange. But we're reminded by Moses of the things that are going to happen and how he warns us and tells us to remember what the Israelites went through. We're reminded to reflect on the significance of the journey that the Israelites took both into Egypt and out. I'd like to look today from a very summarized standpoint, because the story is quite detailed, of the prophecy and the covenant that God made with Abraham, and then the prophecy of the 430 years and how that's relevant to us today. There's three things that I would like to look, or three or four things to look at. One was, when did these days that we're about to keep, this Passover, the night to be, and the days of unleavened bread, when were they started, under what context? What events transpired? The timeline of the people, who they were, what they did, and the purpose that God fulfilled with his promise. And not only his promise, but a promise of absolute precision to Abram. Then we'll see some of the parallels for us today to take back home with us. To do this, we'll take a look at the covenant God made with Abram. Back when Abram was the good old age of 99 years old. We can find that beginning in Genesis 15. So we'll turn there to begin today. We'll meet several other characters as this story plays out. There's Abraham. Obviously there's God, because he's behind everything. Abram. Then there's his children, Isaac. A special focus today on Jacob, his 12 sons that we know as the 12 tribes. And then also Moses and Joshua. Each of these people played a pivotal role in what the children faced as they went into Egypt. But beginning in Genesis 15 and verse 12, we see where God is talking to Abraham, and he's starting to make a covenant with Abraham. And we can pick up the story in verse 12, where he says, "Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram. And behold, horror and great darkness fell on him. And then he said, God, to Abram, know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and that will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And also the nation whom they serve, I, God, will judge. Afterward, they will come out, or shall come out, with great possessions. Now, as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried at a good old age. But in the fourth generation, they shall return to me, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not complete." And in verse 18, he says, "On the same day, the Lord made covenant with Abram, saying, your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt to the great river Euphrates." Speaking of where the Israelites would be going. So here what we see is what we know as the 430-year prophecy that God is making. And this covenant on this day started that timer. So from this day of the covenant until the Israelites would leave Egypt is exactly 430 years. And as we'll see at the conclusion, even to the very day of the covenant, 430 years later. So what we see that part of this covenant, what God was telling Abraham was going to happen to his children. The first thing he says is that they would be his descendants would be strangers in a land that they do not own, that is not theirs. That they will serve those people in that land. That those same people would eventually start to afflict them. And that God said, I will judge that nation that does that to my people. And afterward, they would come out, and not only out, but out with great possessions. Now, a little side note, a little tidbit, just to put everything in context. Abram was 99 years old at this point when this covenant was made. His son Isaac was 29. Jacob, the father of the tribes, wouldn't be born for another 31 years at this point. Joseph, his son, he's 122 years out. Moses, 296 years out. And Joshua wouldn't be born for another 336 years at the time of the prophecy, or the time of the promise that God made. Abraham, the other part of what God told him, would die peacefully as a good old age. We can read that in Genesis 25. In Genesis 25, in verses 7 and 8, somewhat of a summation in these two verses. Beginning in verse 7, he says, this is the sum of years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last and died a good old age, an old man full of years, and was gathered to his people. So the one part of that covenant and that promise that God made just came true here in Genesis 25 at 175 years old. So that was about 76 years after he made that promise. So the first step that we read in Genesis 15 is the covenant with Abraham. It's the covenant of circumcision, which God changed Abram's name then to Abraham, stating that the two different names have a slight different meaning. Abram means an exalted father, where Abraham means the father of a multitude, or the father of many nations. And we know the story, and for summation reasons, we can't go into all the details because it would take a long time, but we know the story that Isaac gave birth to Jacob, whose name would later be changed to Israel. And then Jacob had 12 sons and became known as the tribes of Israel. We want to pick up the story at this point where God said in Genesis 15:13 that Abram's descendants would be in a strange land. So we want to start there today. And the beginning of that story starts with Joseph, the next character in this story. And it begins with, in Genesis 37, where Joseph has probably made a few calculated misheirs and things that he said to his brothers, like, I had a dream, and in this dream, you all bow down and you serve me and you worship me, and that goes for you too, mom and dad. And he wasn't well liked because of that by his brothers. His father showed partiality. He even made him a tunic of many colors, to which he didn't give any of the other sons or daughters. So the brothers resented this favoritism that Joseph had from his father. And we pick up this timeline now from that point in Genesis 37. In Genesis 37, and we'll begin in verse 23 to start this journey into Egypt with Joseph. In verse 23 of Genesis 37, the story starts, so it comes to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers. Now they were in Shechem, supposedly, and Joseph went hunting for him, and they weren't there, but the people around him said, no, they've gone to Dothan. He heard him say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph is on his way to Dothan to find him, and when he saw his brothers, he came to him. His brother stripped him of his tunic, and the tunic of many colors that was on him. They took him and cast him into a pit. That's how much they loved their brother. Then he took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. So the brothers then sat down after this, and they ate a meal. And they lifted their eyes up and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, their camels bearing spices, balm, myrrh, and on their way to carry this stuff to Egypt. So Judah, the lion of Judah, seems to be the instigator in this particular situation, said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him. Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, he is our flesh. And the brothers listened to him. So then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled up Joseph and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. So the journey to Egypt begins with Joseph at the young age of 17, going in as a slave. We find out later that Joseph was sold to the Ishmaelites, and then the Ishmaelites sold him to Potiphar. And we know a lot of that story. I won't go there today. But this journey continues as we move towards how Joseph is going to pull the rest of his family into Egypt. 23 years almost passes by from the time that Joseph went in there at 17 years old before he then became a ruler at 30 years old over Egypt. We know that when Joseph reached out for his family in Scripture, it was in the second year of the famine. So we're in year 9 of the prophetic plenty, the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. And this is when Joseph reached out to his family and tried to get them to come to Egypt, because he knew in advance that his family didn't know that this famine was going to last for 7 more years. They were at year 2 and they were already out of food through all the land of Canaan and Egypt. But Egypt was the only country that had food at the time. In Genesis 45:11, we can qualify that. Genesis 45:11, it says, "There, I, Joseph," talking to his family, "said, I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still yet 5 years left in the famine." So God tells Jacob, it's okay to move. Go ahead and do as your son has requested, and you can move to Egypt. So in Genesis 46:5-7, we see that transaction happening where Jacob is now going to leave where he's at, and he's leaving from Beersheba to Egypt at this time. We pick that up in verse 5 of Genesis 46. Verse 5 of Genesis 46. And there he said, "And Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones and their wives, in carts which Pharaoh had sent them to carry them. So they took their livestock, their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and they went to Egypt, Jacob and all of his descendants with him. His sons' sons, his sons' daughters, and all of his descendants he brought to Egypt." Fun fact number 3, I get interested in numbers. I'm sorry if I'm sharing too many numbers here with you, but there were 66 people in Jacob's family at this point as they're going into Egypt. There's 66 people total. There's 4, which is Joseph, his wife, and his 2 sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So that's a total of 70 Israelites existed when Jacob came to Egypt. At the end of the story, you'll see what the difference is there. Another fun fact is that Moses wouldn't be born for another 144 years, and Joshua was about 184 years out from coming on the scene. So the third element of the prophecy was that his children would be strangers in the land, and that's where Jacob went, to become a stranger in a land that wasn't his own. So the next part was the part of the prophecy is where the Egyptians would afflict them, and they would put them in bondage. And we can confirm that through a couple of scriptures like Exodus 2. Exodus 2, verses 24 and 25, where he says, "So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel and acknowledged them." Skipping over to chapter 3 and verse 7 and 8, a little more detail is revealed. "And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. And I have heard their cry because their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows." And in verse 8, "So I have come down to deliver them out of the land of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good large land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to a place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, and Jebusites." And the third place where he gets to leave in a little more detail in chapter 6 of Exodus, verses 5 through 8, he says, "And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel who the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Therefore, say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you shall know I am the Lord your God who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage, for I am the Lord. This confirmation of the 400-year prophecy shows the Israelites were suffering at the hands of the Egyptians in that land that they were strangers. The next step in the prophecy is that God would judge the people of Egypt. He would judge the people of Egypt. We can find that in Genesis 15, verses 14, or 13 and 14. And the latter part of 14, he says, "Also this nation whom they have served, I will judge. And afterward they will come out with great possessions." So in the passing of time, several events have happened up to this point. Jacob would have lived another 17 years from the time they got there before he died. Joseph would live another 71 years before he died at 110. Moses wouldn't be born yet for another 64 years at this point. And Joshua is still 104 years out from showing up. They would be enslaved and God would render judgment. Quickly speeding up the tape, another 144 years has now passed by. And now Moses has reached the age of 80 and Joshua has hit 40. But what would be the judgment that would now pass on Egypt? What would God do to those who have kept his people in bondage? We can read Exodus chapters 7 through 11 to go through the plagues that God judged Egypt with. But for today, water turning to blood, the second one frogs, then lice, then flies, then livestock pestilence, then boils, then hail, then locusts, and then darkness. And the 10th plague is probably the most important because it ushers in the beginning of a new era for the Israelites. Freedom. Freedom for the first time in 400 years. Moses has instructed the Israelites to prepare for the 10th plague, just as he's taught us. And this begins to outline the holy days that we keep today. For the 10th plague, they were instructed to sacrifice a lamb and that they would kill it on the 14th day of the first month of Abib. And they would put the blood on the posts and on the lintel of the houses. We pick that up in Exodus 12, in verses 5 through 7. Exodus 12, verses 5 through 7. It says, "Your lamb will be without blemish, a male of the first year. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats." In verse 6, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. And they shall take some of the blood, and they shall put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat it." So they were to kill the Passover lamb on the 14th day of Abib before the Passover would happen. Then continuing in verse 29 of Exodus 12, verse 29, God said, "And it will come to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in Egypt." So the 10th plague was the firstborn were going to, all the firstborn who did not have blood on the doors and on the lintel, that firstborn of each household, of each animal, would die. And it says the firstborn of Egypt, the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock. So it was at this point that Pharaoh rose in the middle of the night, he and his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not one house where there was not one dead. And he called for Moses and Aaron, Pharaoh did that by that night, and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and your children, you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Also take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me too." So Pharaoh finally released the Israelites after the hundreds of years that they were in servitude from being enslaved and told them they can leave and they can take everything with them. But there was one more promise that God had yet to fulfill in this prophecy. And the last piece of this was the departure, of this departure was found in Genesis 15:14, in the latter part of the verse where he said, "Afterward, they shall come out with great possessions. So they're going to leave Egypt, and they're going to leave with great possessions. We can pick this up and still in Exodus 12, back up in verse 33. Exodus 12 and verse 33. And the Egyptians urged the people at this point that they might send them out of the land in haste. For they said, you can read this into this a little bit more, it says, because if we don't get them out of here, we're all going to die. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up on their clothes and on their shoulders. The children of Israel had done according to what Moses had told them to do, and that was to go to the Egyptians and ask for articles of silver, gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians so that they granted them what they requested. And thus they plundered the Egyptians. And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Sukkoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides the women and children. Now they started somewhere around 400 years ago with 70 people. And now they're leaving and there's 600,000 men plus women and children. So you can estimate somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5 to 2.4 million people. I mentioned to somebody yesterday, I said, you know, I put that in Excel and I tried to figure out what the growth rate was and how to reverse engineer that. After about five attempts and ChatGPT couldn't figure it out either, so we just called it a day and said, I have no idea, but it's pretty exponential growth. I think the first calculation that came out was they would have to go from year one with 70 people to 1,499 people year one. And then that'll have to multiple each 1,400 would have to then multiply that same number until it got to whatever that number turned out to be, around 2.4 million people. That's just a lot of people compared to 70 starting. I think that was one of the problems the Egyptians said, and there were several scriptures that pointed out that it was because of that massive population growth that scared them, because they were greater in number potentially than the Egyptians were, and they were just afraid that they one day they may just decide they want the land and they could take it. So they did what they could to make their lives miserable in the meantime. But from this point through the Red Sea, the wilderness, and crossing over the Jordan, at the hand of Moses and Joshua, they would lead into the promised land over the Jordan. Again, what's interesting about this story is that from the day that Abraham was made covenant, 433 years later, to the very same exact day, it was the night to be. The night to be much remembered that we'll keep on Monday night is the exact same timing. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing to consider that God, to the very day, 430 years with all these circumstances playing out, could precisely say, you will walk out 430 years to the exact day from the day that I made my covenant with Abram. I found that fascinating, that God's precision is that excellent in keeping promises to stiff-necked Israelites that we are. So we're going to honor God by observing these days, brethren, to do what we are taught, to follow, to understand this miraculous story that we've heard, and to appreciate what he's done. And we can draw from this, these stories, the parallels of how it fits with us and how it kind of made a roadmap for us to be like the Israelites. Today we come out of the world as the Israelites came out of Egypt. We're told in Revelation 18:4 by Christ himself to come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, lest you receive her plagues. The Israelites also had to kill a lamb on the 14th day of Abib. Likewise, we will keep the Passover tomorrow night. The blood of the lamb on the doorpost and the lintel saved their life, just as we also, by the blood of Christ, are saved from his death and the penalty of sin. Paul tells us in Galatians 5:1 that we are to stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again in the yoke of bondage, which is the world, which is the sin. In John 8:34, Christ tells us, what is that bondage? How does it happen? How is it possible to be in bondage? He simply says, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. Paul tells us in Romans 6:6 that our old man that we're supposed to be getting rid of was to be crucified with him, Christ, and that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin. Lots of parallels that we can draw from Scripture. And through the Passover sacrifice, we have obtained mercy. We have obtained forgiveness. We have found a pathway that leads us to the kingdom. In 1 Corinthians 5:7, we're told again that, brethren, we are to purge out the old leaven, that we may be a new lump, since you are truly unleavened, for indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. As the Israelites sacrificed the lamb on the 14th day, we celebrate the Passover. We are a special people to God. We find that in 1 Peter 2, verses 9 through 10. In 1 Peter 2, verses 9 through 10, Peter tells us, we're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Who once we were not a people, but we are now people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims to abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. Peter telling us, we are just like the Israelites. We are strangers. We are pilgrims in a foreign land. We live in a foreign world to us once we have become part of the family. So we want to remember the promise, the covenant that God made with Abram, his descendants, and the 430 years that God has fulfilled his promises to the very day. That Abraham's descendants would be strangers in a land that is not theirs, that they would serve the people of that land, that that people in that land would afflict them, and that God would judge them eventually, and afterward they would come out with great possessions. God made a promise, he kept the promise to the very day. We similarly have a promise that's been given to us, a promise of eternal life. And with the precision that God has given to the Israelites, we'll get the same precision in each and every one of our lives. That whatever it is that he's told us each to do, he will give us the tools, he will provide the way, and give us the strength to do exactly that. It's hard to comprehend that when the Israelites came out of, and they were coming out of Egypt, and all the battles that they faced when they went into the promised land are very similar to the day in, day out of life for us. Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, because human beings are all facing a daily walk, trying to be a person that God has called them to be, and they face the same thing the Israelites did thousands of years ago. Life is no different. Yeah, we've got ChatGPT, and we've got cool tools, we've got cars that they didn't have, but they had other stuff that was really cool. They had a simpler life in some ways. But at the same time, it's just you getting up each and every day facing who you are and where you're to come to this perfection that's required. That battle is no different no matter what generation, of what era, of what year that you come up in this world. It's all the same. What we do have for sure is that God has made a promise to us that that good work that he has started will be complete, and he will not abandon us before we complete that process of coming through our full conversion. As we look at the night to be this year, maybe we can dial in a little better focus. It's not just a meal. It's not just getting together with God's people. It is a solemn observance of a fulfilled prophecy and an exit and a freedom given to the Israelites that we now have slightly in a mirrored form. Maybe the conversation needs to be more about that. Maybe it needs to be more about what God has done to take you out of the world, to set you free from the Egypt that you've lived in and may still be and haven't quite made it there yet. Maybe that should be more of the conversation, maybe more of the centerpiece of what we do. I think he wants us to remember what he has done. He's given us this, as we know, as an example. Everything that's happened in the past is for us to use today. It is the example that we have to live by. We have Christ, we know, as our Passover, that leads us to the next chapter, potentially, of our lives. Well, we have accepted this challenge, which it is quite a challenge, to just follow the instructions, much less do it really well. But to come to perfection, we're required to strive forward and to have the motivation to do so. So, brethren, let us focus this year, as this holy day is Passover night to be, and the days of unleavened bread unfold here over the next few days. Let us really focus in on what he has done and look within ourselves to see how closely we are aligned to doing our part. Because we have the examples of the Israelites not doing theirs, but are we different? Let's focus on the fulfillment of these promises that were made with the accuracy and the precision God did, and how he wants to do that same thing for you and I today, at every minute of every day. He's readily available. Let's talk about how he brought them out, how he made everything come to pass, how he judged the Israelites, or judged the Egyptians, and he brought his people out with plenty. And to us, he's gifted something much greater than gold, silver, and clothing. He's gifted us with eternal life and an opportunity to be in the kingdom and be part of his family. Let's remember that this night to be.